Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
All right, everybody, welcome. It's Sunday. It's the main course. I'm sitting here in New York. It's snowy and icy.
That was a really excited intro.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited about the Heritage Station. Damn, we are kicking ass. We have 400,000 listeners a month. I mean, including downloads. Actually, we need more people on our website, but 400,000 people, including iTunes and downloads and stuff like that. That's amazing, Jack.
Yeah, seriously. My family doesn't believe me.
And you know everyone by name. That's really awesome. Well, we have a real interesting show this Sunday. We have the folks from A16 Restaurant are going to be on, the chef and the sommelier and owner. And then we have Kip Ramsey, who is a kind of new frontier in the restaurant industry. He refers to himself as a farm-to-table coordinator. So I remember in the 90s, there were like foragers, and everyone's like, oh, I want to be a forager. And then... now there's farm-to-table coordinator. Everyone's nice. Like, I want to be a farm-to-table coordinator. Anyway, so it's funny. We interviewed 28 people for this job opening at Heritage, and every one of them was like, I'm interested in the foraging aspect, you know, the visits to farms and, you know, long, drawn-out weeks, you know.
The romantic parts, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, do you know how many pounds of Boston butt weighs? They're like, this job scares me. So anyway, it's going to be a great show. But, ooh, did you hear Joe Paterno die?
Yeah, really.
Wow, what an interesting long career he had at Penn State, only to be, you know, derailed at the last second by the sex scandal, you know, with his defensive coordinator, Jerry Sandusky. I mean, you know, it was a real sad way for things to end for him. I mean, the only peace I find for all those people that were sobbing at Penn State is, you know, for most of his life, this guy was a god.
Yeah.
You know, and it was only in the last 8 months that things got crazy. So, I mean, in the end, you would still have to say he was a lucky guy, you know, even though his legacy is tainted for sure.
Indeed.
So, anyway, rest in peace, Joe Paterno. Week in review. Jack, take it away.
I have new music this time. So, wait,
by the way, Jack, did I forget? Sorry, we are sponsored today by, it's the first time they've sponsored my show, but,
right.
You know, Cochon 555 is an event that celebrates heritage breeds, and, you know, there's this guy, great guy that works with them, Michael Sullivan. You know, he is literally one of the nicest people I've ever met and worked with through the phone. That is really a great series of events, and it's really bringing attention to the importance of genetics when it comes to taste and quality and even humane treatment in food. So, you know, good luck to those guys. They have a big event here in New York, and also they have events throughout the country.
It's tonight, the New York event?
It's actually right during the Giants game.
Wow.
Yeah, which is bad luck for them if any of their constituents are Giants fans.
Tough.
But, you know, they do great work, and they get chefs and people to come and learn that, you know, there are differences in pig varieties. So go onto their website, cochon555.com, and find out about their events throughout the country celebrating chefs, heritage breeds, and wineries.
Cool.
All right. Well, sorry to interrupt,
that's
Jack.
Okay.
Week in review.
I'll spare you the music again. We'll go right into
it. No, go to the music.
Paula Deen has diabetes, and I'm sure everyone has kind of found that out over the past week. The real caveat in the story, though, is that she becomes the spokesperson for Novo Nordisk, which is a pharmaceutical company, and you know, now she's the diabetes spokeswoman, and she's getting a very hefty salary for that. I thought a funny comment we found online was from Anthony Bourdain on Twitter, who said, I'm thinking of getting into the leg-breaking business so I can sell crutches later.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the unfortunate part of this story is that people who eat badly, you know, most people in the world who, you know, eat unhealthy diets, when they get diabetes, you know, they don't get sponsorship dollars to help pay for it. So, you know, she does. And of course, you know, Paula Deen is, you know, I'm sure not a bad person, but, you know, it's just, why support Smithfield? That makes no sense. It seems like, you know, the code of ethics of chefs should always overwhelm. Smithfield should have some, you know, nameless corporate chef in some industrial cafeteria as their spokesperson. But, you know, when someone really famous supports that, you know, I just saw the movie Babe, and I think about all those funny talking pigs and how sad that would be if, you know, they were just in confinement. That movie would have been totally different plot if that happened. But, you know, why support Smithfield? You know, why support Dunkin' Donuts? You know, why not do an ad supporting the independent coffee shops and diners throughout the country? You know, and this brings up one last point I'll say. You know, with all the money being made by all these celebrity chefs, it's interesting that really, other than Danny Meyer, not one of them has opened a single outlet of anything in an economically challenged neighborhood.
Sure.
I mean, Danny Meyer does the Shake Shacks here in New York, but I mean, not one guy. They'll open in Singapore before they will in New Haven. And, you know, this idea of a break-even business that ends up having a social change in a place like New Haven or Detroit or, you know, a suburb of Phoenix or something like that. It would just be interesting if a chef decided to go ahead and invest in, you know, a kiosk or something that just produces delicious hot dogs using all local stuff or sustainable. Anyway, well,
in the case of Paula, couldn't she just donate that salary, you know?
Yeah. Well, she's friends with Oprah. Poor Oprah. She's always had trouble with how to deal with food. She got sued by some guys in Texas, some beef guys, and now here she is doing long interviews with Paula Deen.
Yikes.
And, you know, you just wish she could get the whole food thing a little bit more.
Oprah could come here and redeem herself anytime.
Then she could put her hand on my knee and be like, how are things with Anne? So now we have got a massive, massive celebrity on doing shows now with us once a month.
This guy, Patrick Martins.
No.
Jessica B. Harris, culinary historian, Dr. Jessica B. Harris, is doing a monthly program with us. That's our first post-produced content. It's called My Welcome Table. And
so this is the first edited content by basically you in the studio and not live. So that's already a historic first for the HRN.
Yeah, it's going really well. I mean, she travels so much, so every month she's going to visit a different place, explore the food and culture of that place. She brings me recordings from her trips, and then we kind of turn it into a little documentary piece.
And some of these places are in Africa, San Francisco, Haiti.
We're doing Jamaica and Puerto Rico next.
Jamaica, Puerto Rico. So, wow, this is fascinating. So you have a clip, Jack?
I do. Let's listen to a little bit. So this is from the first episode, which was New Orleans. And again, this is My Welcome Table by Jessica B. Harris.
And tell people, by the way, before it starts, how they can access it on our website.
Right. Well, we have a program set up so you could see Jessica's face as an icon on
the
front page.
Okay.
But also our SoundCloud, which is where we put the Daily Bites. If you follow us on Facebook, we also have the program there. So those are two places you can get it. And by next month, Jessica B. will be on iTunes. So look out for that. Anyway, here is a two-minute clip of My Welcome Table.
Ladies and gentlemen, flight number 2635 with service to New Orleans. We ask that you remain seated in the berth.
Compass Point, 29.59 degrees north, 90.15 degrees west. New Orleans, the Crescent City, the Big Easy. It is the home of the American cocktail, one of the best eaten cities in the country, if not the world. My second city, and the spot on the compass that we'll visit on this very first edition of My Welcome Table.
My darling New Orleans, my crawling hometown, your magnolia melancholy howie softly set me down in corner bar.
I must have been marked as a child. For my sixth Christmas, my Uncle Jim, whom I adored, gave me a record player that played 78s. Yeah, I'm that old. It came with two records. One was Jambalaya by Hank Williams.
By Joe, me gotta go, me oh my. Me gotta go pull the P-Roll down the bayou.
The other, Shrimp Boats, sung by Joe Stafford.
Shrimp boats is a-coming, their sails are in sight. Shrimp boats is a-coming, there's dancing tonight. Why don't you hurry?
Needless to say, I wore them out, and that was vinyl. And their words became embedded in my DNA. It took more than 20 years after that before I made my first trip to New Orleans. But when I did, it was as though that distant soundtrack had come alive. On my very first trip to the city, I managed to connect with Dillard University, an historically black college where the late singer Ray Charles established a program in African American.
Could hear her read anything, right?
Yeah, no, she's got a nice voice. Wow, that is real great. And yeah, she's a real powerhouse. She's written like dozens of books on Afro cuisine.
Incredible.
And yeah, she's just
Nicole.
Really...
Nicole's been working with her too, Nicole of Hot Grease, Nicole Taylor, and she said that Jessica B. Harris's apartment is like a library for African American recipe books and all sorts of books. It's just a huge library she lives in.
Well, good for us. That one other feather in the Heritage Radio Network cap. I mean, we are really becoming more and more legitimate, you know, alternative media source. I mean, that stuff's just flat out entertaining.
Absolutely.
So didn't you nominate some stuff for James Beard Awards, Jack?
Yeah, we submitted a few things. Cooking Issues, A Taste of the Past, Our Daily Bites. I believe Beer Sessions was submitted too.
Hmm.
So, you know, we'll see if they agree.
Cool. So tell us about other news.
Other news. Brooklyn Grange, good friends of the station, finally signed a new lease, and they will be in Brooklyn now. How about that?
So that's the largest rooftop garden maybe in the world, but certainly in the farm, really.
Yeah.
Certainly in the U.S.
Yeah, so they're moving from Long Island City to Flushing down by the Brooklyn Navy Yards.
I really like Ben Flanner. He is just a great guy. Like, everyone wants to see that guy succeed, and it's awesome that he's dedicating his talents towards a great cause like, you know, urban gardening.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's exciting, and we'll have more news. Actually, we'll probably be covering the first plantings they do. We'll probably go down there with a recorder. And,
that's always good on radio, plants growing. Yeah.
Yes. We just press fast forward, and it sounds really cool. Yeah, exactly.
You never use the sound effects board, Doc.
You know, I listened to
it's lost potential.
I listened to a main course episode from 2009, and we were pretty reckless with that sound
effects.
Well, that's
because I was using it. So, tell
other
us.
News. Yeah. It's Restaurant Week.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Right.
I really am a big fan of Restaurant Week. I think more people that go out, the better. And actually, what we're finding out is like eating at places like Lupa for lunch, that costs the same amount of money as getting, you know, a horrible chicken salad sandwich and potato chips and a soda and a donut. You know, you're only talking about $5-7 more.
Absolutely.
And I always loved that Italy, you know, you would just go when I lived out there and, you know, people would take 2 hours off for lunch. Mm. It was so cool. I'd watch The Simpsons. I would take like an hour nap. You know, I'd raid the fridge and then, you know, back to work. And then, of course, you know, I would sleep for the next hour because I had just consumed so many calories. But no, I'm a big fan of Restaurant Week. I think people should go out and support restaurants more often.
Do you feel like, you know, you get the same experience during Restaurant Week as you would on a normal night?
Yeah, I think, you know, they still try. You know, you might not get the same quality, you know, I mean, where they put so much time, like there might not be as much pre-preparation involved in all the dishes. You might not have all the choices, but certainly if you go to Lupa or Del Posto or, you know, any of Danny Meyer's restaurants, yeah, those guys are still going to try to give you the best tasting meal they can. No, I'm a big fan of, you know, driving that type of commerce.
Is anybody doing goat for Restaurant Week?
No, we don't have goat. We only had 10, 15 goat. So we basically sold out to the Heritage Meat Shop.
Until next year.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back with the folks from A16 and Farmstead Restaurant in
Chosen power.
So here we are back on the main course, sponsored by Cochon 555 today. And we have calling in from San Francisco, David Taylor. David, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for being on so early. People wake up early on the West Coast, though, don't they?
What's that?
People wake up early on the West Coast.
Not when they work dinner service on a Saturday night, but okay. But I did it for you.
Oh, thanks very much. So, you know, A16 is, I always remember Carlo Pacini, the founder of Slow Food, said it was at one time his favorite Italian restaurant outside of Italy. So no small feat. And A16 is a very successful restaurant near the water San Francisco. And it's named after a highway in southern Italy, the A16, right? The A16 highway?
A16, yes. That's the highway. It runs from Naples to Rapinia through Campania.
So A16 focuses on southern Italian food. What dishes do you wish you could make, but you are not allowed to make because it's not the provenance of southern Italy?
You know, when I first took over there, you know, I felt obliged to give the owners warning that I was not some master of southern Italian cuisine. I had worked with in Italian restaurants before, but never something that was so regionally driven. Although I had worked with a chef from Sicily for a while, and I had worked at a restaurant here that was predominantly Tuscan, but never quite so regionally driven. And there's quite a few things that are sort of in my repertoire that I just sort of have to put on the shelf a little bit. Some of the more intricate shapes of stuffed pastas like caramellos and tortellini and things of that nature.
Is that more northern Italian, that stuff?
That's a bit more northern Italian because you need to make a much richer, eggier base pasta dough. That's really more how they do it up there. And then, but the one that really got me was Ribollita. Because I love Ribollita.
What is that?
And Ribollita is there's a like many things in Italy. There's a lot of different ways to make it, but it's basically a soup where the predominant ingredients are cavolo nero and cannellini beans. And then when I used to work at a restaurant called Poggio, which is in Sausalito here, we would take it and we would sort of make this dried bread pancake. We would just ladle the soup into this bread, and then we would saute it, and it would be like this super moist, really flavorful pancake of beans and Tuscan black cabbage, and there's really no one ingredient in there that just says that they don't have in Campania, they wouldn't use in Campania. There's really no method there, but that dish itself is just not just Tuscan, but it's so iconically Tuscan that you know, it would be like opening up a soul food restaurant in Atlanta and serving New England clam chowder. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
It's not that they don't have roux. it's just too iconic. So that was one of the ones that I sort of had to find some other ways to take those same ingredients that I love and just find some other different ways to use them.
So from a chef's standpoint, a well-trained chef, we'll get into what you learned. We'll get into that in a second, but what is a very complicated thing? Like, what would you say is one of southern Italy's more challenging dishes that is really the domain, the realm of the top-tier chefs who have the opportunity, the tools, the technology, the practice ability, you know, all that?
I think there's a lot of
What do you find a great challenge? Like, what's hard that you've still never duplicated perfectly, or is there not because it's just a simple cuisine?
Well, you know, I think the challenge is really lies in its inherent simplicity. You know, and you can't, you know, it's somebody told me once that, you know, when I was a much younger cook and. That the most important ingredient is oftentimes the one you leave out. And I think that's why I've gravitated so much towards Italian cuisine, because the challenge to me is to make the food as good as it can be with as few ingredients as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when one of my favorite dishes on the menu right now is the rucola pizza, which is our pizza dough with ricotta cheese, sea salt, and Olio Nuevo and arugula, and one, you know, and people look at it sometimes and they think, oh, that's it, you know. But when those few ingredients work together very well, mm-hmm. you know, then to me that's much more rewarding than making something that is maybe much more complicated. It has a lot more steps. And
yeah, your pizza is great, by the way. It's really a great, great pizza.
Thanks.
And so now you are an Italian restaurant in San Francisco, which, you know, doesn't really raise eyes, you know, that's total, or eyebrows. That's totally normal. But your wine is all Southern Italian. So is that, does that breed loyalty or anger? I mean, being, you know, in the heart of Napa Valley practically and selling all Italian.
We do have a few California wines on, but not many. And because, you know, we do, and that's sort of evolved from our commitment to keeping the food production as local as possible. We do have a few wines, but, you know, people really actually seek us out for that wine list because, you know, I moved to San Francisco in 1998, right after college. And I started working at an Italian restaurant that had an all Italian wine list, and it was Carlo Bidioni's restaurant, Vivandi. And Vivandi had this all-Italian wine list, and they got a lot of press for it, and people thought it was a very daring thing, but people also, there was some reluctance to it, and he sort of broke down and got away from that and put some more California wines on, and he was all over Italy. It wasn't just Southern Italy.
Yeah.
And but what Shelley Lindgren has really done is, she's really gone over there and established relationships. So there's so many wines that, you know, in the late 90s and 2000, you never saw them here before she brought them over. Mm-hmm. And they're great, you know, even though a lot of people would say, you know, there's no good wine that comes out of Sicily. People would say that 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's completely untrue. Or they would say, you know, there's good wine in Puglia, but it all stays there. Like, and maybe 20 years ago, there was a bit more truth to that statement, but it's really not true anymore. And I think Shelley Lindgren has really sort of paved the way for that.
She taught me, you've got to be a Puglia to ignore Puglia. Let me ask you this. What are diner expectations in Northern California? You know, and I ask that different, you know, like almost compared to New York, you know, and how far can you push them? Like, you know, what is the average San Franciscan who lives there? What are they looking for? Is it the same as everywhere else?
No, I don't think it's the same as everywhere else. I think we actually really do have a very unique dining culture here. And I think it's focused on, like much of San Francisco. You know, San Francisco is the place where, you know, nobody who lives in San Francisco is from San Francisco, it seems. This is a place where all the nonconformists come, and, you know, truth be told, I had a Mohawk in high school, and, you know, now I live in San Francisco, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. So what I find is that what people in San Francisco are, what the dining populace is really looking for is they really want the top quality stuff. They really want the best quality food. They want the best. They want a very knowledgeable staff. They want a really well-rounded wine list. And they want to be able to ask that server when they ask them some obscure question about the wine that they're drinking, or they want to know where their food came from. They want to know if it came from some local farm or if it, you know, came off a truck from Arizona.
They want to know if the chicken had friends and what
its name
was.
They
want
to know all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But having said that, as long as, and they want the food to be top-notch, but having said that, they want it in a much more casual atmosphere than I think they do in New York. So if you ask your server a question, you know, about some obscure vintage of wine, the important thing to San Francisco diners is, are they friendly and do they know the answer, and are they helping to enhance your dining experience? And if they have plugs in their ears and a full sleeve tattoo showing, we don't really care. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are a few places here where people go for a different type of experience, and the servers are wearing suits and ties, and there's a few of those places here, and they do a great job. But the real crux of it, places like us, places like Nopa, and places like Delfina, there's a bit more of a casual atmosphere to it, even though I think, you know, I don't like to talk about myself too much, but I think there's a lot of other chefs out there who, you know, really do fantastic food and in a very, very casual atmosphere. And that doesn't mean you're walking up to the counter, you know, and you have a number sitting on your table. It just means that your waiter doesn't look like a penguin, and you know, and it's just not, doesn't have such a stuffy feeling. You know?
I do like that. Although it is fun to get treated like shit by certain waiters in New York, like at Sammy's Romanian Steakhouse or Peter Luger. But I do hear what you're saying, and I think you really are good at explaining, you know, breaking down that culture, you know, in a few words. I see everything that you're saying. I spent a lot of time out there. So, what do you bring to San Francisco personally? This is a two-tier question. It's one of the last questions we have for you, but I thought since you're answering all these questions so well, I would give you a tough one. What do you personally bring to San Francisco, and what doesn't your region have? It's a region that everyone figures has everything. So what is lacking in that region, and what do you personally bring?
The biggest... Are you speaking in terms of ingredients and so forth?
Well, yeah. What do you bring to San Francisco? Like, what is happening unique at A16, or how are you trying to differentiate yourself through? Is it just loyalty to the region, or do you try to break some rules, or are you just trying to stay consistent and pure in the few dishes you guys make?
We definitely bend some rules. That doesn't mean that there's New York cheesecake on the menu, but we definitely do bend some rules, and we bend rules in ways of. But even with it, when we bend the rules, there's still rules. Mm-hmm. So there are just some agricultural products that we get here that they don't, that diners in Northern California love. That people in Italy don't. They don't get it, and they wouldn't want to use it. You know, one of the first one that comes to mind is corn. You know, we have so much wonderful fresh corn from these great local farms all over Northern California. It grows really well here. It's super sweet and delicious, and you get it for a good chunk of the summer. And I'll make corn stock, and we don't do risotto, but I do a fregolala risotto, and I did one with corn and fava beans last year, and people really enjoyed it, but in Italy the corn is basically used for polenta and animal feed. That would be one. And as far as the things that we import, you know that we have to really bring to us, there are a few things. We do a mix. You know, sometimes we'll serve prosciutto di Parma, but I actually prefer the La Quercia, right now we're serving the La Quercia domestic prosciutto, because it's from 100% Berkshire pig, and I think it's a little, I just prefer it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cheese. There's cheeses, of course, that we import. You know, there's
Do you buy from the cowgirls sometimes?
What's that?
Do you buy from Cowgirl Creamery sometimes?
From Cowgirl, we don't buy anything from Cowgirl right now. We have in the past. Cowgirl really do a good job. They have a lot of great stuff. There's a lot of other small creameries in Northern California. I mean, a lot. And right now, our cheese list is all based on is all coming from a Bohemian Creamery, because she does her cheese is more in the Italian style. Mm. And she also was willing to work with us. She's so flexible on delivery and minimums and things that, you know, a lot of other people weren't. And so sometimes when you're dealing with specialty products, it comes down to, you're tasting two things, and you sort of like them both equally, but one person says, you know, you got to buy $1,000 worth of this, and the other person says, well, I'll just bring you whatever you need because you're on my way home. And so we kind of tend to go with the people who are going to work with us for some of those things. And Bohemia Creamery was willing to do that, and their product is fantastic.
That's awesome. Now, just out of personal interest, is most of your staff, your new staff that you bring on, from schools or just from the apprentice spectrum, you know, this apprentice side of the business?
It's a mix. There's a mix of people there from various backgrounds and from various skill sets. And that's what I like. I like having some people there who are you know, I think in the sous chefs, I have three sous chefs who are all just fantastic, wonderful people, and I'd be completely lost without them. And, you know, I have one of them who's been with me for several years, and he actually did his internship from school with me in my previous position 5 years ago. And I have somebody else who was promoted from within, so this is her first sous chef position. And then I have Chris Thompson, who really runs our salumi program, and this is probably his last sous chef position. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to have that mix, and it's the same within the cooks. I have some people who have already worked in, you know, three-and-a-half-star restaurants for 1 to 2, 3 years. And or maybe one step away from a sous chef position, and then I had some other people who are still going to school and working part time, and I have some people who have maybe finished up school within the past year. And,
yeah,
I like to have a mix.
Well, very,
like
very
mix
interesting.
And
well, A16 is arguably, you know, the best pizza in Northern California. They also bring in whole animals and break them down and use all the parts from nose to tail. Everything on their menu is sourced with, you know, consideration. So I really recommend people eat at A16. And thank you, David, for giving up some of your Sunday. And I hope to eat at your place again. It's always delicious.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, hope to see you soon.
Thanks for coming on.
All right.
So here we are back. What a great interview with David. He is very well spoken, wasn't he, Jack?
Sorry, yes.
Yeah, he's very well spoken. So now we have on Shelley Lindgren. She does it all. Not only does she run two of San Fran's most successful restaurants, A16 and SPQR, she's also their wine director, teaches wine classes, and is the mother of two kids. So welcome, Shelley. Thanks for being on.
Oh. Well, thanks for having me on, and David earlier, too.
Yeah,
that's
David's
great.
Very well-spoken. You're lucky to have him.
Definitely.
Is it difficult to be a restaurateur in San Francisco? Is it any different than being a restaurateur in New York or Cleveland? I mean, is there anything different about it? Or, you know, tell us about the process of opening your restaurants and what it was like.
You know, I feel like I'm a native here. I was born just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. And so I've been working in restaurants here for just over 20 years and here in the city. And we're a really close community. I had last night there was another restaurateur who I've known for 20 years who has his own couple restaurants in town, and our kids go to preschool together, and we're doing an auction, and there's a lot of charity work and local farms, and we feel really fortunate with the products we're able to get year-round. So I think there is there's a real common support and love for our local farms and also trying to get the best products we can use. So so that way we're really fortunate. I don't know about, you know, operating restaurants in other cities, but New York's so exciting. There's always so much happening, and there's so many people that, you know, just in the bar business, which my husband's in, we think, oh my gosh, you can drink alcohol till 4 a.m. here, you know.
But what about
different
the nitty gritty of it? Like, you know, the mm-hmm. rent, the guys that put the pipes in, mm-hmm. the guys that pick up the garbage. I mean, is that all just a simple thing? Because here it's kind of like you don't know which one you're supposed to align with. You know, there's mm-hmm. different companies have different neighborhoods. Like, is it a simple, mm-hmm. honest, easy, fair business out there? Or is there, you know, guys you got to try to just figure out a way to deal with because they hold your restaurant in their hands.
Well, this is something we're in the process of growing right now. We've been looking at a few places. We're actually we take a lot of caution going into a lease because it's like, you know, you're getting basically
you're marrying the guy.
yeah, you're getting married, and you if you get into a bad lease situation, it could really your business could be out of business in 6 months. You know, if you're paying too much rent, it doesn't make sense with the numbers you're able to get and the price point you want, you know, for your neighborhood restaurant or the style of food you're serving and wines. So you really do have to go in with a lot of caution and not just rush in and say like, okay, I'm ready to do this and I want to do it now, because it might end up to be something that isn't a good decision. Yeah.
Well, I know you spent a lot of time in Italy meeting all these Italian wineries, but in all your travels, is there anything that you lament that you cannot find in San Francisco? Because it seems to be a region that everyone thinks has everything, but is there anything that just isn't found there at all that you wish you could be?
Well, I wish we had truffles and we could find them in our yard. But no, we.
No one can ever imitate truffles. It's amazing.
I know. You know, the hospitality you get in Italy is something we try to recapture at the restaurant, because there is just a wonderful, simple sophistication of dining. It's just that balance of a few different flavors. It's all about the product in Italy as well. And so we learned a few things from there. It's just that translating it is our interpretation of being as authentic as we can, because of the fact we use our local flavor to do that. And so in Italy, we had 20 Italians in just the other night, and it's my biggest compliment if they can come in and feel like, wow, they just traveled, poured wine all day, and now they can sit and relax and feel like they're being taken care of like they would be in Italy, you know? Because Italians are very specific, but all about the simplest things, and you know, you can learn from those details.
Sure.
But, yeah.
So if a 25-year-old kid was listening to this show and they wanted a secret or just insight on how to begin the long, arduous process of constructing a great wine list for a restaurant, what secrets would you give them? Things to watch for, lessons learned?
I would, I think once you, for us, is knowing the food that you're serving and the wines are going to complement the food, because this is the match that's supposed to happen. And there's always more than one option of wine that will go with a dish. If somebody prefers a white wine or a lighter red or a bigger red, but there are matches that really sing. And so, you know, it's educating your staff. It's picking the right things to go with the food and, you know, a lot of different price points, because, you know, there are people go out for different reasons and sometimes they want to celebrate and splurge. And a lot of times it's, you know, I like a white wine. This is what I like. And there's so many grapes in Italy that we just finished our SPQR book. This past week we submitted it. It's coming out in the fall. And I still am thinking about, did I get them all? Is there something I missed? Because there's just so many. And some producers it used to be more of a traditional modern split, and now there's a lot of gray area because just this younger generation's coming in with, you know, they always want to improve on what their parents did. A lot of it's handed down. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, it always looks a little bit more glamorous from the outside when it's like, oh, just drinking wine and, you know, eating food and drinking wine and it's a dinner party. But there is a lot of care and thought and a lot of time goes in to get to the point of being in service operation. So I always look at the food.
Yeah, but that's a good Good bit of advice. Well, this has been an all A16 episode, and David was very, very great on it. So you can do a search for A16 on our website, or look at our archives, or look at the main course and learn all about this restaurant, from the food all the way to the wine. And like I said, Shelley, earlier, Carlos stated once that it was his favorite Italian restaurant outside of Italy. Mm-hmm. So that's high praise. And I really recommend to everybody that they should go to San Francisco. You feel like you're in New York. You know, you feel like you're in Europe, and that's awesome, because sometimes, as you say, that's lacking a little bit in San Francisco, as great, or the Northern California, as great a region as it is. So thanks for being on, and listen to the show.
Thank
and
you.
We will be back in 1 minute.
All right. Thank you so much.
We are back. This is an all San Francisco, Northern California, Napa Valley show, because I was just there for 4 days. And man, what a great place to visit. For me, it's by far and away the number one vacation spot. Like, if someone has 4 days off, a week off, you have Napa, Sonoma, San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley. I mean, it is just, you have Highway 1, you're 5 hours away from LA, you're 8 hours away from the redwood trees, Napa Valley, where do I even start? And, you know, really a shining jewel of a restaurant, kind of family style, you know, traditional, recognizable food, but just done super well, is Farmstead. So we have the farm to table coordinator on, Kip Ramsey. Hey, Kip.
How are you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
So Farmstead's a very big restaurant. They have their own garden. They have their own herd of Highland cattle. They have all types of things, which we'll hear about. So, Kip, in the 80s and 90s, we were introduced to the craft of restaurant forager. And then in this decade, we learn of the farm-to-table coordinator. What is that?
I guess to answer that question, we first let the listeners know exactly what Farmstead and Long Meadow Ranch encompasses. As a company, we have the Long Meadow Ranch Winery and Long Meadow Ranch Olive Oil Company, which produce an array of different beautiful wines to pair with our food, and two different olive oils, the Napa Valley Select and our Pratolungo, which is made with some of the oldest olives in California. So have our cattle company that you mentioned, which is one of the largest folds of purebred Highland cattle in California. And we have Rutherford Gardens, where we produce our organic vegetables and fruits. But we have Laddie Tins there that produce free-range eggs. So my position is to coordinate all of those different aspects of Long Meadow Ranch and filter them through Farmstead Restaurant and through the farmer's market. So, needless to say, it involves a lot of planning and a lot of coordinating different managers of all those different aspects, and making sure we don't waste anything. Other than that, my responsibilities are similar to that of a sous chef or a chef, in that I need the help in the kitchen daily to, you know, you help their strategies to use products.
So what do you do? Do you schedule the slaughter of the cattle, and then how it'll be cut, and mm-hmm. when the deliveries come, for instance?
Yeah, so as far as the harvest schedule for that, too. So our steer are kept. We keep the bulls up on the ranch here, and then when they graze in some, which is, maybe not all the whistles, it's right on the coast, and they, you know, it's beautiful seagrass full of nutrients. And then they go from there up to further harvest. So when we harvest in Ferndale, I'll go up and and hang out with the butchers there and, you know, show them exactly how our cuts and how we want it packaged and how we want to have it processed to the restaurant. And then from there, we develop a forecast of what we're going to need and when we're going to use it in the restaurant.
Very good, very good. So what can the average American learn from the craft of farm-to-table coordinator? Like, is it applicable to, you know, the average American, the way the forager was?
Well, because we are, there's few people that kind of have all the different aspects that Long Meadow Ranch has. So it's kind of a position that was developed of necessity to kind of, you know, to coordinate all these different aspects. What, you know, the average American, what we're trying to do is it's been said before, but it's just education, take care of yourself and families and trying to know where your food comes from, because, you know, if you know where your food comes from, where it's produced and who produces it, it's going to taste better and it's going to make you feel better. Mm-hmm. That's basically, you know, the aspects of the planning and coordinating different, you know, it's there's not much more that I think the average American could take from it.
So you've lived in both places. Which city serves better food? Not ingredients, just where is the restaurant experience better, New York or Northern California?
Now you're putting me on the spot. I think the attitude. I think since I've been out in California, it's kind of a little, and there's a larger diversity of products that we have. It's more about making really good food, and whereas the restaurant scene, I think, was a little bit more competitive, which elevates the cuisine. And, you know, and everybody's out to make really, really good, elevated. So, I'm going to say I enjoy the West Coast right now.
Good, good, good. You did not lose your job. Well, this is awesome. Stephen, we'd like to have you come on more often and talk about the seasonality and the, you know, what's going on, and especially during tourism season, you know, where people, what they should be looking for in Napa, what's fresh, all of that type of information. So thank you so much for being on. What's the farmstead? Is it farmsteadnapa.com? Is that the website?
Farmstead Napa, or you can just Google Long Meadow Ranch.
Oh, yeah, Long Meadow Ranch. It's a great restaurant.
Both of them come up.
It is a fun restaurant. They do special events. It's huge. They got a great wine list, friendly staff. It's all open air. It's right on 27. Is that the highway? You know, the main Napa Road? 29. So anyway, well, thanks so much, Kip. Thanks so much to Shelley and David from A16, to Jack for engineering, and we'll be back next week.
Kushan555.
Yes, thank you to them, and I hope our pig wins, and we will be back next Sunday.
Go Giants!
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.